Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now we continue our midterm election series, 30 issues in 30 days. Today and tomorrow will be issues related to crime and criminal justice. So let's get right to issue 14. Is there a Democratic and Republican way to prevent gun violence? Public opinion on gun laws is very different by party on some issues, but there is much more common ground that you might think on others. We'll get into some of that and take your calls with our second guest in this segment. Probably the biggest difference is on whether public policy should focus on the proliferation of guns as an underlying reason why we have so much more gun violence in other countries, or whether it should mostly be about locking up the bad guys, as they say, after they commit violent crimes. That conflict got put on steroids by the U.S. Supreme Court this year in a landmark case called New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin. As CNN described the impact of the decision just this week, it says, since the June ruling, federal judges in at least a half dozen different cases have already cited the Bruin decision to rule against gun restrictions that have included local assault weapons bans, prohibitions on the manufacture of homemade firearms, and bans on older teenagers publicly carrying handguns. Several other laws now face new legal challenges under the precedent, says CNN, among them zoning restrictions barring shooting ranges, licensing and training laws, and the federal ban on certain misdemeanor offenders from possessing firearms. On Thursday, a federal judge in Syracuse leaned on Bruin, the Bruin decision, to pause several New York restrictions, including limits on carrying firearms to sensitive places like summer camps, domestic violence shelters, and zoos. So all of that from CNN. Hey, kids, you can now bring daddy's gun to summer camp. Oh, I don't know. Maybe age restrictions for littler kids would still apply. But let's have some fun. Guns in summer camp. The Syracuse ruling that story refers to is about attempts in New York State specifically, but now also in New Jersey, too, to list sensitive places where guns cannot be carried in public as exceptions to the general public carry principle that the Supreme Court ruling established. So our first guest in this segment now is the New Jersey Assembly Speaker, Craig Coughlin, who has some news to break on this. He is a Democrat whose own district is District 19, covering Woodbridge, Perth Amboy, Carteret, and other places around there, just a little south and west of New York City. Speaker Coughlin, we really appreciate you joining us today. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you for having me. And the other two are Sayreville and South Amboy. I grew up in South Amboy. Can't let them go unmentioned.
There you go. So I see you're introducing a package of bills today relevant to carrying guns in public. Is that right?
Well, yeah, a bill, Brian. It's a single bill relative to the concealed carry.
Okay.
In response to the Bruin decision, in response to the thousands of applications that are being made to New Jersey courts for permits to be able to carry concealed weapons. The Bruin decision flipped ours. You needed to establish the basis for being approved for a concealed carry weapon over the last 100 years in New Jersey, and now things have been reversed. And so we're addressing that issue.
Well, your press office told us this bill will go even further than what New York is trying to do and will be the toughest response to the Supreme Court Bruin decision in the nation. Can you describe that in comparative terms like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, we do. I think we will be the strongest. Our bill includes a list of, I believe, 26 separate sensitive areas where concealed carry weapons would be prohibited. We require training. We require insurance on the for people who obtain the permit. We require background checks. Some of the things are similar, of course, to New York. But I think, what makes it different is the insurance aspect of that and the training.
go into more detail on the insurance aspect of that?
It requires a person who obtains the license to obtain a insurance a policy, either a rider to one's homeowner's insurance or to obtain some policy consistent with the way we handle people who have driving licenses, right? You have to get a license to operate the vehicle. You're then permitted to operate it. But if your conduct is negligent and you cause injury to somebody else, then you're going to be you're required to have insurance to protect the person that you injured. So too here with the guns.
That sounds
or
kind of ground,
carry weapons, not
groundbreaking. That to carry. So if you have a license to carry a weapon in public, that's when you would be required to carry insurance.
Correct. Yeah. Now, yeah. I mean, this is not a an attack on responsible gun owners who have had weapons. They don't have insurance before. That this has to do with the concealed carry permit.
Is that groundbreaking? I don't know personally of any place where gun owners under any circumstances are required by the state to carry insurance.
I think it. Yeah, I think other states may have done that. I'm not really sure. We pride ourselves in New Jersey on having the toughest gun laws in the country, and we continue to want to maintain that position, and we're going to work to do it. So whatever measures we think are fair and reasonable and respect the Supreme Court decision, although I think they got it wrong, we're going to put them in place because our fundamental job, Ryan, is to protect the 9+ million people who live and work in New Jersey, the 9 million people who live in New Jersey, and people who come here. You know, there's just the notion that you're going to be able to have, as the New York decision, which struck down the stadiums, the notion that you're going to be able to go to a Jet or Giant game, where we have, you know, tens of thousands of football fans, all zealous, eager fans, many of whom were tailgating beforehand, and have people there with concealed carry weapons. It doesn't seem to me to be a safe recipe.
Do you think the Supreme Court Bruin decision actually would stop them at MetLife Stadium from screening for guns? I know when I go to sporting events, you got to go through metal detectors. Do you think that would?
Yeah, I don't think the venue would want to. Although I think it was silent. What I was talking about was the New York decision, which struck out the stadiums as being a place that could be a sensitive area. So, I don't believe that. I think what we're doing is not going to be in contradiction to the Supreme Court decision. I think, you know, ours will pass the muster because I believe it's in the best interest of the health, safety, and welfare of those millions of New Jerseyans and people who come here who have an expectation that they're going to go to a place that's safe. You know, concealed carries threaten that. And I think that taking measures to make sure that places, some of it is just frankly is common sense, right? Do we really think that people need concealed carry weapons when they're taking their kids to daycare? When I'm on the beach in New Jersey, you know, we have miles of beautiful beaches that millions of people go to each year.
You know what a lot of Republicans would say? They would say the answer to a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. So if you're in a daycare center or a school or on the beach at the Jersey Shore or wherever, if there's somebody who's, you know, for whatever reason, wanting to go on a rampage, if you have law-abiding armed people there, that it might be to the interest of public safety. What's your response to that?
Well, I agree with you that that's what they might say. I don't know that in the overarching sense if that has ever been demonstrated to be true and raises the specter of the possibility of things really going off the rail. Police wouldn't know who the good guys are and the bad guys are. You know, one of the reasons we include training is so people know how to use a gun. So hopefully we would mitigate the risk of people who have no idea what they're doing would be able to use their weapons. But look, I think that's a talking point that I think, you know, on its face sounds like it may make some sense. But the truth of the matter is, I don't know that we've seen any demonstration of that in any great measure, right? I mean, I'm sure there are certain circumstances where that has happened.
We've also seen many mass shootings where the shooter had a legal firearm, so that argues in the other direction. One thing about go ahead. You want to make a point about that?
No. I was going to make the point that I suspect there are many isolated instances where people have maybe been able to defend themselves by using a gun, and you know that is a good thing, right? But the truth of the matter is, when we're talking about larger shootings and incidences, then people being there, we've seen most recently where there were police on duty and mass shooters have been able to get into the building, right? We've seen where people, where there have been things going on and people have not been able to get their weapons out. And by the way, the notion of conflict makes it more challenging. If everybody has a weapon, then we don't really need
right.
people being able
and,
to.
And an undeniable statistic that we've talked about on the show many times is that there are just so many more guns per person in the United States than there are in any other country, or at least any other industrialized country. And we have the highest rate of shootings by far compared to any other industrialized country. So it would be hard to argue that that's a coincidence. Let me ask you a legal question, though. If you're hoping that your bill is going to pass muster with the Supreme Court, if it gets challenged all the way up there, Justice Thomas said in his majority opinion that the only regulations, and I'm quoting here from a CNN description, Justice Thomas said the only regulations that can be deemed constitutional are ones that don't encroach on conduct plainly covered by the Second Amendment's text and that are, quote, consistent with this nation's historical tradition, unquote, from Justice Thomas. Meaning, says CNN, that they have a parallel in the type of regulations in place at the time of the Constitution's framing. So, Speaker Coughlin, if there was no sensitive spaces exemption under the law in 1791, and no summer camps, I presume, how is your package of bills going to stand up?
Well, I think we need to recognize that the world has changed. It's a different society than it was then. There's much less room. The founding fathers couldn't possibly have considered what would happen at MetLife Stadium on a Sunday where the football games are going on, because they didn't have one and there weren't, 80,000 plus people coming to a game. So I think that you need to recognize that the world has changed, that the weapons have changed, that there's more people, that we're more densely populated and all those things. I think it's wrong to say that there isn't an evolutionary process, as there is in so many other places, right? So I think that a compelling argument can be made to say that the world is different than it once was, and that we need to look at how we provide for the well-being and the safety of the residents in today's world.
One more question before I let you go, a political question. Do you expect bipartisan support? I think you don't need it with a Democratic majority in both houses of the New Jersey legislature, but do you expect bipartisan support? Do you think in this instance,
we haven't started. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say maybe a New Jersey Republican is not the same as a Texas Republican, let's say, on this kind of issue, but I don't know.
Well, I'll leave that for Republicans to define whether they're different from state to state. But I think the answer is we're hopeful. We think we have a bill that is going to be an effective way of protecting the people of New Jersey. We think it's a bill that's fair and reasonable, that addresses valid concerns and does it in a way that is permissive. And so while I haven't begun the work of knowing yet whether my colleagues in the minority party will join us, I'm hopeful.
And there you have it, folks, a bill being introduced in the New Jersey Assembly today. to require insurance be carried by people who have concealed carry permits in the state of New Jersey, making a list of sensitive space exemptions to a right to public carry that they hope will pass muster with the Supreme Court, despite the Bruin decision earlier this year and other provisions. We thank the New Jersey Assembly Speaker, Craig Coughlin, for laying it out for us on day one. Assembly Speaker, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
We'll get a take now on how Democrats and Republicans actually agree more than you might think on what some of the nation's gun laws should be, though not on others. With me for this is Kaylee Rogers, politics and technology reporter for 538, the data news site. Kaylee, thanks for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Brian.
And as you might have heard, we're inviting listeners to call up and take the interactive quiz on this, the way you laid it out in your article. And your article is called "Just How Far Apart Are the Two Parties on Gun Control?" And you relied on a variety of public opinion polls. So before we jump in and look at these eight different questions that you ask, what polling data did you base that article on?
Yes, yeah, so we used a variety of different polls. We tried to get the most recent ones, but some of them go back as far as 2019, you know, from different polling sites. So Morning Consult, ABC News, Pew Research Center. So really kind of ran the gamut. And we're just looking for these specific areas where we could break down by party and how they responded on specific policy ideas and also just sort of general thoughts and feelings around gun control in America.
And as I said, you lay it out in a fun, interactive way. So one more time, listeners, if you see Kaylee's article on 538, you get the chance to guess how many Democrats and Republicans, or what percentage of Democrats and Republicans think what about specific gun law issues. And spoiler alert, we're about to give you the answers. But if you want to call up and guess, there are eight different ones. We're going to try to go down the whole list. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, if you want to try your hand at this, as Natal in New Brunswick, I think, is ready to do. Natal, you there?
Hey, Brian. I'm here.
So, Kaylee, I'm going to read him your question number one, which is, what percentage of Republican and Democratic respondents do you think said they strongly or somewhat support requiring background checks for all gun purchases? Guess the Democratic percentage and the Republican percentage.
I guess the Democratic percentage would probably be somewhere in like 80s, like 85%, probably, if not higher.
And
Republicans are probably maybe 10%, I would guess.
Kaylee,
not quite.
tell them the answer.
So you were pretty close with the Democrats. 91% of Democrat respondents said that they strongly or somewhat support universal background checks. But this is one of the areas where we do see that consensus. So 77% of Republicans also supported background checks. This is a pretty universally appealing policy point.
All right. Yet we don't have a bill requiring universal background checks. So give us your politics take on that.
Well, I mean, it's state by state, right? There's limits to how much Congress can do. And a lot of this comes down to the states. And as we were just hearing on the last segment, you know, even in Democratic-led states where there are stronger gun laws, now they're kind of having to contend with the Supreme Court and what is actually considered constitutional. So we're still working out what the sort of barriers are on what gun control can look like, even at the state level, even when there is support from voters and from legislators.
Do you have your article there in front of you? Do you want to read question two to the next caller?
Sure.
All right.
Yeah,
it's Alexander in Morganville. Hi, Alexander. You're on WNYC.
Hi.
Go ahead, Kaylee.
Okay, so yeah, for this one, so we were looking at the Republican and Democratic views on preventing people with mental illnesses from purchasing guns. So what percent of Democrats and Republicans do you think strongly or somewhat favor preventing people with mental illness from buying a gun?
100% should be on both sides.
That's your opinion. What do you think the Democrats said, and what do you think Republicans said
Democrats
in the poll?
Democrats 100% not to allow guns, and probably 80% for Republicans.
and probably 80% for Republicans. And actually, Alexander is on the right track on this one, right?
Mm-hmm. So it was 90% of Democrats, 85% of Republicans who support this kind of ban. And, you know, it's interesting because mental health is something that often comes up, especially after we have a mass shooting. Many Republicans kind of point to that as being the thing that they want to focus on more so than any kind of gun control bans or things like that. And as we can see, it's really popular on both sides of the aisle. So that's probably why we saw so much mental health funding in that big federal bill that we had passed this summer, funding for finding people who are at risk and helping young people who are struggling. This is sort of something that's really popular and appeals to both sides of the aisle.
And it's interesting. I'm sure advocates for people with mental illness would be distressed by the high yes response from members of both parties to the very general way that question was worded.
Absolutely.
Do you favor preventing people with mental illness? Well, that could be any kind of mental illness. So many people with mental illness are not any kind of a threat. And yet that's the way the question was asked. And the response was practically 90% on both sides.
Right. And many people with mental illness actually are more likely to be victims of gun violence. I know that when that gun bill was passed, or the gun law was passed by Congress this summer, you know, mental health advocates were like, okay, well, it's great to have more funding. We're in favor of that. It's kind of crummy that it got rolled into this stereotype that, you know, if people are committing some kind of gun violence, they must be mentally ill, or that mentally ill people are inherently dangerous in some way. And that's not necessarily true.
Jeremy in Queens, you ready for a question on public opinion on guns by party?
Absolutely, Bry Guy. Lay it on me.
Kaylee, go.
Okay. For this one, we're going to be talking about red flag laws. So these are laws where a family member or a law enforcement officer could get a court order to temporarily take away guns from a gun owner if they felt that they might harm themselves or others. So what percent of Republicans and Democrats do you think respectively supported red flag laws?
Well, I've read your article and I remember you saying that, and I'm joking, I haven't read it. So let's see, what do I think? There's been this whole theme of just like, what do you think? And then there are these curveballs I'm going to think that it's going to be kind of equal for both Democrats and Republicans. I'm not sure, but I'm going to say it's very similar between Democrats and Republicans.
And once again, Jeremy, thank you. You are on the right track. It's not exactly the same, but we've got three in a row here from the top of your list, Kaylee, on which a lot of Democrats and Republicans agree on potential gun restrictions.
Right. So we did have majority from both Republicans and Democrats on this question. 70% of Republicans and 85% of Democrats said that they strongly or somewhat supported red flag laws. So, you know, there's a 15-point difference there. That's not nothing. But again, we've got majority support from both sides. And again, this is another chunk of that Bipartisan Safer Communities Act that was passed this summer was for funding for red flag laws. So it provides funding for states to either pass or to expand red flag laws if that's what they want to do. And it's sort of a way to try to incentivize that. Again, another one that has a lot of support from people of all different political opinions.
Marshall and Edison, ready for the next question?
Yeah, sure.
Go ahead, Kaylee.
Okay, this one's about banning assault-style weapons. What percent of Republicans versus Democrats do you think strongly or somewhat favor banning assault weapons?
Well, the Democrats, I believe, will be higher on that, definitely over 50%. I would say 75% for Democrats and 45% for Republicans.
Pretty good, pretty close. And now we get into the ones in your article on which Republicans and Democrats disagree more, right? So those first three were so interesting to see on those big issues, including universal background checks. There's really a lot of agreement among rank-and-file Democrats and Republicans around the country. Now we get into ones where there's more difference, yes?
Right, right. As soon as you start getting into bans, that's where you start to lose a lot of the Republican support. So this caller was correct, or pretty close to correct. It was 83% of Democrats, 37% of Republicans who were in favor of banning assault weapons. So this, even after we have, you know, you can see public opinion shift a little bit after some of these big profile mass shootings. People start to get more, you know, concerned again and thinking maybe we should ban these weapons. But it's rare for that Republican to support to creep up much higher than around 40% like we're seeing here.
Marshall, thanks for calling in. And because we're running out of time, I'm just going to run through these last several with you. And the one at the end is the one that might be most revealing in a certain respect. But your question number 5, what percentage of Republican and Democratic respondents do you think said they strongly or somewhat favor allowing teachers and school officials to carry guns in K through 12 schools? Well, 24% of Democrats, only 24%, thought allowing teachers to carry guns in schools is a good idea, but 66% of Republicans. So there's a big partisan divide there. Then what percentage of Republicans and Democrats said they were very or somewhat confident that passing stricter gun control laws would reduce mass shootings in this country? Just 34% of Republicans thought that it would make any difference to mass shootings, but 87% of Democrats, that's such a huge split. Then what percentage of Republicans and Democrats said they or anyone in their household owns a gun of any kind? And this may be kind of a political dividing line here, because only 28% of Republicans, I'm sorry, only 28% of Democrats, but 48% of Republicans said they own guns. And finally, what percentage of Republicans and Democrats said they believe the right of people to own guns is more important than protecting people from gun violence? And this one, Kaylee, this is the one that made me sit up and do a double take and ask myself if I read that right. What percentage of people believe the right to own guns is more important than protecting people from gun violence? And only 9% of Democrats thought that it is, but 39% of Republicans said gun rights are more important than protecting people from gun violence.
Right. And a plurality of Republicans said, so 49% said that both are equally important. But it's really striking that 39% said that the right to own a gun is more important, not equally important or just as important, more important than protecting people from gun violence. And as you noted, that's a 30% gap between the Democrats and the Republicans here, which I think explains a lot about why this is such an ongoing debate.
So by looking at all these poll results from Pew, from Morning Consult, from others, do you think you learned anything in the process of writing this article about opportunities or barriers for gun control laws to actually pass, since that's kind of the issue here as we do this topic in our midterm election series?
Yeah, I think that it revealed that there actually, you know, there is so much more consensus than I think a lot of people might assume. There's sort of the stereotype that, you know, Democrats want no guns and Republicans want no gun laws. And obviously that's not the case. The vast majority of Americans fall somewhere in the middle. And there is a lot of area to, you know, come together and make laws that appeal to a broad variety of people. And I think that actually we saw that happen this summer with the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act. Again, it's limited what Congress can do, but they really focused on those areas where Americans agree and tried to target that for this kind of legislation. And I think at the state level, that's what we could see as well, especially in states that, you know, there might still be a lot of debate among voters. If you could focus on those few areas where there is consensus, then that's how you're going to get laws passed. That's where you're going to start making incremental progress to hopefully reducing the gun violence.
Kaylee Rogers writes about politics and technology for 538. Kaylee, thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian.